Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Marketplace Discussions podcast. My name is Mahmoud Resmi, and today's guest is Nick Gray. Nick is an entrepreneur and a best-selling author living in Austin, Texas. He started and sold two successful companies, Flight Display Systems and Museum Hack. He is the author of The 2-Hour Cocktail Party, a step-by-step handbook that teaches you how to build big relationships by hosting small gatherings. Over 75,000 people have watched his TEDx talk about why he hates most museums. He's been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Magazine called him a host of culturally significant parties. In this episode, I discuss with Nick some of the best practices to host your own 2-cocktail-hour party. I myself tried his formula, and it was a great success. I hope you enjoy today's discussion. If you have any questions, please feel free to leave them in the comment section below if you're on YouTube, or you can reach out to me at decafquest on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode and want to keep up to date, you can click on the subscribe button below. And thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this. And
oh yeah,
I cannot
but kicking it off with
explain how helpful this was when I organized my my party. Honestly,
it's like, so funny about the harmonica, why. Right? Yeah, it's yeah. So funny. And when I was writing the book and I talked to people, they're like, "Oh, so many things are very unique to you." But the harmonica, no way. I cannot do the harmonica. Everybody says, I can't do it. Too silly. And then they host their first party and say, oh, I should have got the harmonica.
Indeed. And I didn't want to take any risks in this case. And honestly, it just saves a lot of time and effort. I just stood on the chair and I was like, you know, blew into the harmonica and everyone would listen to me. Like, they turned back and they're like, okay, now, so we're doing something. So it's a great way to just catch people's attention.
It's a really funny device for like noise making stuff. Anyhow, I'm excited to talk about.
It would have been also helpful for me in classes because I used to teach also at the school.
Yes, dude.
How did I not ever think about this?
Wait, I've talked to some other people who are professors and they use the party harmonica in their classes. It's just a soothing, strange noise. Anyhow, we cannot start the episode. Yep. If anyone hears the party harmonica, they say, it's over. I'm canceling this podcast. I'm not going to listen to it. They won't understand until they host a party why that is necessary. And sometimes you just don't know.
But this is it's a good way to kind of start as well, because tell us about yourself, Nick. Thank you very much again for agreeing to do this. I know you're a very, very busy man, so thanks for making the time to do this Marketplace Discussions podcast. And yeah, tell us about yourself.
I love Marketplace Discussions. I love Decaf Quest. I'm happy to be here, so it's an honor. And I think it's so cool that you hosted a party. My name is Nick Gray. I live in Austin, Texas, but I lived in New York City for 13 years, and I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I've started and sold 2 successful businesses, but now a lot of people know me on the internet because I talk about how to make friends, how to build your network. I talk about conferences and events and meetups, and I wrote a book called The 2-Hour Cocktail Party that will teach anyone how to host a really good event. And I'm excited to talk to you about this because you actually hosted it, and you'll have a very different perspective now. Yeah, I'm curious from you, what surprised you about the process of hosting your own event with my formula?
Surprised me in what sense?
Like, for example, someone says, oh, it was very easy to get people to leave at the end of 2 hours. Or one thing that surprised me for you was I think you had everybody show up on time.
Yes.
So I'm just thinking things that you said, oh, that was helpful. That was something I didn't think about or that I didn't expect?
In fact, a couple of things, and I'll start with this one. This is why I have it here. So the name tag, I know, and I'll take it now so we don't confuse people, but this has proven to be quite helpful. I did not think it would be well met at first, to be honest, particularly because of the context. I am based in Spain, in Salamanca, Spain, a small student city, almost northwest of Madrid, 2 hours and a half away. And but they actually, it was very helpful, and people remembered each other's names by the end of the party. Like they didn't ask, you know, oh, I forgot what your name is. They were like, they were just calling each other by their name, and this was very helpful. It was also surprising, like the entire structure. I was mind blown by how easy and helpful it was for people to know what to expect. Like the entire structure, maybe some people would be skeptical about, you know, oh my God, it has a starting time and ending time, and then all these emails and so many things, you'll tell us more about them. But then the fact that it was structured and people knew when it was going to start, when it was going to end, and what to expect in between, everyone was just signed up for this, and they were just very kind of excited. It was fun. Like, I really genuinely enjoyed organizing, hosting, and meeting new people.
For those that are listening, there is a lot of structure at my events. And it's funny to think, a lot of people say, oh, a party, I don't need structure. You know, I just want to hang out. I want to see my friends. We just want to hang out. We don't need name tags. We don't need structure. Well, let's zoom out a little bit and know that the purpose of my gatherings are to help you meet new people and to build your network. And one part of that involves you inviting new people that you normally wouldn't hang out with. I'm in Mexico City today, and I went to one of my readers' parties on Wednesday night, and he said, I had fallen into the trap of inviting the same people every time to all of my parties. They were my core group, my friends. And I say, that's great. That's fantastic. And everybody should have that. But also, how could your life be different if you had some new friends, some new connections, some new colleagues, maybe either for work or for personal, people who inspired you, who invited you to great events, people who made you think differently? And, you know, it's hard to meet people as we get older. It's hard to make new friends and connections. It's ironic because we need them more than ever as we get older. But many people fall into this trap of just inviting the same people again and again. And for those types of parties, absolutely, you don't need name tags. But know and realize that when you start to add new people to your events, which I hope you'll do, it's changed my life by building my network. You want to make it easy for them to feel welcome, accepted, and included. You don't want them to feel like they're walking into a room where it's a bunch of cliques. Cliques is the worst, and we forget how hard it can be for an outsider to walk into that type of room. So anyhow, I have a lot to say about that. But by the way, think about the experience for somebody who has a new girlfriend or boyfriend, and they want to bring them into your group. That is very intimidating. For them to come as a plus one to a party where they don't know anyone. And I'm increasingly thinking about shy people, those with social anxiety, or just post-lockdowns, post-COVID. We just want to know some rules. We just want some guidelines. So I'm talking too much, but that's kind of an overview of how I think about structure and the reason why we want to host these gatherings to really meet new people.
And we will be discussing this in more detail, but you did put a lot of thought and effort into writing the book and into having everything ready and prepared to make it as easy as possible for people to just organize their party. Like, you have, for example, you have the book, and then you have the appendix at the end, and then you have a website where you have different blog posts, just short articles about, you know, to complement the book, how to organize, what to buy, etc. And then you have lists of to-do lists or checklists before the party starts to make sure that everything is all set. So you just did it in a way such that all you want now is everything is done on your end, and you're like, hey, just all you have to do is organize a party. So thank you very much for doing all that, because it was helpful for me as well. Not only did I buy the book, I bought the audiobook as well. I listened to it and then I read the ebook.
You bought all three? I think you might be the first person I've talked to that. I need to give you a special award. This is the best podcast I've ever been on in my whole life. This is incredible.
Man, thank you. I'll tell you. I know you're on the podcast to explain all this, but also I think I would like to share like the reason why this has been helpful to me as well. First, I bought your ebook right around when the book was published, maybe a bit before. I don't know, like maybe a bit after. I don't know when exactly it was published, but I bought the ebook. I read it. It's a very easy read, very well structured, clear, straight to the point. It's like there's no reason why one wouldn't read the book. And of course, just like any other book, in this particular one, you have a how-to and everything is well structured, as I said. So if you just read it and you don't organize a party, then you'll forget like 80% of it, because all these details, you know, like you have to do this, you have to do that. But then it was curious. So I forgot I bought it. I think, when did the book come out?
June of last year. So June, yeah, yes. I'm wondering what happened between June and now.
Yeah, so I bought it in right around when it was published. But what happened was, we were in an apartment that was extremely small. Hmm. And it was not fit for organizing or any party. And then we were looking for another apartment, so we moved right around November. And then there was the World Cup football, soccer. So we were very busy, and then we were buying our furniture because it was unfurnished. So it took us time to settle in. And this place is much better for receiving people and organizing parties. It's not that big, but then, I mean, I wouldn't be annoying our neighbors nor anything of the sort. So it's isolated somehow. So having 20 people in an apartment is not that big of a deal. So that's one. Two, I really wanted to host a party, but I am, even though I might not seem shy on Twitter, like my virtual identity is outspoken, etc. I teach classes for a living. I'm a professor. I used to teach at universities. So when I'm giving the lecture and it's within a setting that where I'm not responding to someone else, I don't have this fear of messing things up, right? Like when you go to a friend's house, you don't want to mess things up because there are their friends. And so it can be a bit tricky. In my case, I'm like, I'm always watching what I'm saying, trying not to mess it up if I'm over at a friend's party, etc. But then I started realizing, well,
because you're worried. Exactly. Who is that philosophy guy? He keeps talking to me about philosophy. Who invited the philosophy guy?
Yeah.
Why? All he wants to talk is philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. But then when I'm giving a course of mine like online now, which I've been doing for 2 years now, I'm more relaxed and I don't care. Right. Like if I say something I might that some people might not like, well, I bear responsibility for it and that's it. I'm not gonna, you know. So I started thinking, well, maybe if I organize a party it would give me this advantage whereby I don't have to be shy. I don't have to worry about what I'm going to be saying. I'm not going to be disappointing any friends of mine, because it's like I'm there at my place. And sure. Yeah. And I'm kind of an introvert, because it happened to me when, just like you said, you would be invited to a party. You don't know how to, they're all cliques. How would I introduce myself? Like, what would I say? They're already having conversations about what happened at work, what they did last week. They go out, they're already, you know, their conversation is way different than, oh, hi, I'm Mahmoud. Nice to meet you. Okay, fine. And then, right? So, I started thinking to myself, well, maybe it's time to just, you know, get out of my shell and just make a leap of faith and organize something. So,
You weren't going to do it until I made you do it before I do the podcast.
You did push me, and this was very helpful, because what happened was, We have a core group of friends, but then where I am, it's quite tricky. I'm not the kind of person who would meet people just like that, right? It's not easy for me to do that. And so I didn't know how to get 22 people to the party.
Yes. 20. And most, by the way, for listeners, the minimum is 15. Oh yeah. 15 is what you want. But yes,
minimum,
I think
15,
you
maximum 25. So the sweet spot would be 20. So, but still 15. It was difficult for me to invite 15 people who did not know each other. And that was the key point. Like, I wanted different groups to come to the party, because the entire point is, as you said, to meet new people. Like, we do know a few people there, but then that's it. They all know each other. And so one day, this is another, for people who are listening, this has been a great icebreaker.
Yes.
Because I started one day, we were just, you know, at a picnic out there, and I said, okay, you know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna organize this shit, and we're going to be doing it before the podcast. And so I reached out to one person I knew. He liked the idea. I was like, hey, I read this book, and you do state that in the book. You're like, if you're shy and don't know how to invite someone to your place, just, you know. So I did reach, he liked the idea. He introduced another friend of his, and before I know it, 21 people showed up
to the
party. So, and of the 22 people, I knew only 11.
That's amazing. That's like the best. That's perfect. That's so nice.
Yeah.
It's an overachiever. I think there was some beautiful picnic that you went to that was like a city celebration or something, right? Wasn't it like a city thing, and you had the book and people were asking you about it or something? Anyhow, you said something interesting, which was that you read the book, and then you took several months, and then you finally did it, and you got up the courage to do it. I hear this all the time from people, because you know the number one fear for a new host is that nobody will arrive. And many people, almost everybody I talk to, that is something that they're worried about. And I think everybody has some party trauma from past in their life, when they've hosted an event or they've tried to host an event and not everybody showed up. And that is real. And I heard from a guy in Los Angeles a week ago who said something very special to me. He said, I read your book and I realized that when people didn't show up to the events in the past, it wasn't because they didn't like me. It's because my tactics were incorrect. He said, as an example, I scheduled a bowling night on a Friday night, which, number one, is a problem. That's a very socially competitive. He said, number two, I only gave people 2 days' notice. He said, number three, I didn't send any reminder messages. And number four, I didn't do the double opt-in invitations. I just mass blasted it out. And he said, I went to bowling and none of my friends showed up. And I thought it was because they hated me. But I now realized that the tactics I was using were incorrect. And much of my book can be thought of like an operating system for gathering, like a framework or a formula that you can apply to anything. Because Mahmoud, I tell you, now, if you are going to host a birthday party or if you're going to host anything else, you know the framework to send out your core group first, to test the date, to test the time, to collect RSVPs, to double opt-in intro. It's not just a cocktail party with name tags. You can use this for any gathering. And in fact, I have had some people using my book for baby showers, for housewarming parties. By the way, you have to do this next, or not next, but sometime. Use it for a book swap. Maybe. Would that be interesting for you? I feel like you're an academic. Maybe you'd be into that.
Oh, I'm not into that.
Okay.
But,
say more.
But it's that's what I wanted to ask you about. Like, it's so the book does lay out this basic formula to organize parties, but it does apply to any kind of thematic party and even book
yes.
swap. Like book swap, it doesn't have to be philosophy books. We can swap more interesting books like this one, for example.
Yeah. You can swap. Wait a sec. Why are you not into the idea of a book swap? Why do you hate it?
No. I'm not an academic. I like the idea of a book swap. Like I'm a failed academic. Yeah.
I ditched university. Okay.
I'm not there anymore.
I apologize profusely for insulting you to call you an academic. Please accept my apology.
I wish it worked, but it didn't. The book swap idea is good, but how would you present that?
So for your listeners, by the way, please don't do a book swap first. It is better to just follow the book. Just follow the book for your first party. And the reason for that is because a book swap is a little bit different, because you'll use the books actually as an icebreaker. And so you'll tell your friends you're hosting a book swap. There's going to be name tags and icebreakers to help us mix and mingle. But bring a couple books that you want to get rid of, and we'll all share those around. You would use the book as an icebreaker. So you would say, for example, hey, everybody, what's up? We're going to do a round of icebreakers real quick. Let's say your name, say what you do for work or how you spend your days. And then just tell us about one of the books that you brought and why you brought it and why you like it. And that is an example of using the books as the icebreaker. Now, for you, if you are thinking of planning this moment, I'll tell you some tactical things. Number one, you need to have a lot of table space. So you can use counters and kitchen tables, but you need the table space because people hopefully will bring a couple books and they'll want to lay them out. But a book swap is great because you know what? You probably have very smart friends. And what I have found is that everyone both wants new books and number two wants to get rid of old books. And so you kill two birds. And who's been to a book swap? I haven't been. Nobody invites me to a book swap. I should host. Now that I'm talking about it, it's been years since I hosted a book swap. I should do one. They're a lot of fun. And it's, you know, the other thing about a book swap is for introverts, it's actually amazing. It gives them something to look at, something to do. They don't have to be talking all the time. So it's actually a really nice event.
And then the essential for the party,
yes.
Which is the icebreakers. So tell us, I don't know how you want to discuss this, if you want to go over some tactics first, or you want to just jump into the icebreakers, but they've been extremely helpful to do, yeah.
So the idea of icebreakers I'll talk about first. Let me tell listeners the formula for my book, exactly what the book is, because maybe you're listening to this, you're like, what is a two-hour cocktail party? By the way, it doesn't even have to include alcohol. It's not about the drinks. There's not a single drink recipe that's in my book. You can call this a happy hour. You can call it a gathering. You can call it a fiesta. I use the phrase cocktail party because it represents an easy, lightweight social gathering for people to have a lot of little conversations. You say cocktail party to a new friend or acquaintance, they kind of understand the idea. So that's why I use the phrase cocktail party. But my book is about what I call the Nick party formula. And you can think about it, Nick, all the letters of my name, N-I-C-K. N stands for name tags. I stands for icebreakers. C stands for cocktails only, no dinner party. And then K stands for kick them out at the end. The party's only 2 hours long. So that's the general framework of it. I'll pause to check in with Mahmood before I go into the icebreakers, but that's the framework. Everything okay there?
Yeah.
So the I, which is the icebreakers that you asked about, the purpose of the icebreakers at a gathering is to do a roll call, to give people a conversational crutch, to make having a new conversation more of a soft landing. Imagine how hard it is. You know, maybe you're listening to this and you're an extrovert and you're like, I don't need icebreakers. I'm great at parties. Well, that's good and good for you. But I wrote this book more for people who maybe never host parties, who think, oh, I'm not a host, but maybe they want to be. Yes, Mahmood is raising his hand. Maybe because they're curious what their life would be like, how life could be different if they had a wider friend circle, more professional connections. Maybe they even just want experience with social skills. Parties can help you with all of that. And so that's why I wrote this book, is to help first-time hosts. And an icebreaker helps you do a roll call of who else is at the room for your party to be successful. This is what's so important. For your party to be successful, your friends need to meet new people. Your friends need to feel like it was an interesting event. When you do icebreakers, when you add a little bit of structure, it will set your party apart from the average gathering, which is, let's be honest, it's like, let's just show up and chill. Let's just show up. Bro, I don't want to have name tags. I don't want to do icebreakers. It's a chill party. It's just chill, man. And that's what most people are like. That's what most parties. And that's okay if you know everybody. But I think if you don't know everybody, and that's the purpose of these gatherings, is to really help you and your friends meet new people. I can't stress that enough about it's not just for you, it's for your friends. And Mahmood, maybe you could talk about that, because if I remember correctly, all your friends went out to party at the end of your party.
Yep.
That you probably saw at your party different friends that maybe you never thought would get along were talking and connecting. Can you talk about that?
It's first off, again, there were many people I did not know, and I made it clear during the icebreakers that we are here to meet new people. And so I was even like, the people I knew, like the core group, I was like, if you're together, I'm gonna jump in and I'm gonna just separate you, because you need to be speaking with new people. And I cannot really give much detail, because we would never end the conversation there. But then, yes, there were many people you would think, oh my God, how, like, look at them. And they afterwards were reflecting on this. They were like, if I came across this person, I don't think I would have spoken to them in any other context. But because of the icebreaker, and they said something that was interesting about what they did or what they were passionate about, they had some sort of common interest. And so they automatically reached out to that person and they were like, oh, look, this is, let's talk. Maybe because of the age difference, perhaps, because I did have, like, we had people in their 40s, 50s, and 30s, and a couple in their 20s. So it was quite diverse in that sense. And we had people, I had Argentines, there was someone from the Dominican Republic, and the majority of the rest were from Spain. And then I am from Lebanon. Mm. So it was diverse and culturally and nationality-wise and age-wise. So yeah, it's like, how would you, in what context would someone who does a corporate job meet someone who takes pictures of reptiles?
Yes. Wait a second. You had somebody that takes pictures of reptiles? That's cool.
Extremely interesting ones. And this is why, like, where would these two people meet?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And how would you start this conversation? But then at the end of the day, because of the icebreakers, they're like, oh, let me. And then you have this other athletic coach who's also like, how would you meet someone who's an engineer and he's like busy and is just in a different kind of environment, right? So they learn from each other, and they were just curious. And agricultural engineer, you know, even career-wise. I had medical doctors, agricultural engineers, artists. It was very diverse. It's curious how it all panned out. I'm just happy that it all went well, and honestly, it's all thanks to the formula. So yeah.
What I found is I'm at a right place at the right time, that people want this in-person gathering.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They want to gather. People want to hang out. They want to make friends. We need it. You know,
and they want to meet new people.
Yes. Yes. And they want to meet new people, which is the purpose of these parties. Anyhow, it's something I'm thinking a lot more, is what makes these parties successful. And it is that your friends will get to meet new people, and it will make you look good. And of course, you'll get to meet new people. But the party, I think, is successful. And I think maybe you mentioned you got a lot of thank you notes afterwards. I forget if you're the one who told me that. I hear this from a lot of listeners, though.
Not as notes, but I did receive a lot of thank yous, like verbally, and those who responded to my email. They all were honestly happy. They liked it. I asked them on the spot first, and then afterwards, as I meet them again, and they even were talking about the party to their friends, and they were like, right? Why don't we do that?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's so word of mouth, and everyone was just. See, this is the thing. Why do you think, like, what's so special about this? Because from the looks of it, like from the outside, right, it's just a normal party, just like any party, right?
Mm.
What's there special about this particular way of organizing the party that made people end on such a high note? It was, they all ended on such a high note.
Yes.
And something about the structure, I was, again, skeptical that this would... So the question is branched in this case. Take it from there. But also another thing that I noticed was that it's just... I don't even know how to explain it. Is it... I don't know. Like, let's address this, and afterwards we'll jump into more details. Like, what's so special about this particular formula?
I think that most parties, the bar is so low for success. The idea of most parties is to simply show up and hang out. And when you add a little bit of structure, a little bit of framework, I think that you are being surprised at the success, knowing how little was actually done. Because as a host, you may just think, all I did was name tags and icebreakers. You know, I did some reminder messages, but it's not like you hired a magician. It's not like you had a petting zoo. You didn't use decorations. You didn't cater an incredible meal. Many people, by the way, spend way too much time and energy on the food. They slave. That's why I tell people, no dinner parties. They slave. They spend hours cooking and cleaning and decorating and preparing on something that truly doesn't matter for this type of purpose. Now, there's a time and a place for dinner parties. I've hosted dozens of dinner parties myself, and I know the benefits to them. But for the purposes of meeting new people, I think a cocktail party is easier to say yes to. It's less stress and it's less effort. And I'm trying to show you what is almost the idea of the minimum viable party. What can you do the least amount of work to have the most amount of impact and results? I found that compared to a dinner party, I could spend 20% of the time, stress, and money on a cocktail party and get even more benefits, you know, more benefits because I can invite more people. But why is a party like this successful? Why is it so much ending on a high note? I think most parties do not consider the experience for introverts and shy people. That for an introvert or a shy person to go to a normal party where they do not know people is a terrifying experience. Maybe it's not terrifying. It's simply just uncomfortable. It's something you think, I don't want to do that. You know, I'm going to feel uncomfortable. Even it happens to me. Even to me, I get so wrapped up. Someone invites me to something new. I say, oh, I don't know anybody. What time? Where is it? How far away? Who will be there? And I force myself to go. And I still have a good. And every single time I say, I'm so glad I went to that. But I think that when we make a party more accessible, easier for people to talk to new people, that it's both the power of making it easier for introverts and focusing on many new conversations. For example, during your party, you know the secret purpose of the icebreaker not only is to start new conversations, but to end the existing conversations. You're not in your head. I see this. And it's because many times at social gatherings, we get stuck talking to someone. And frankly, we're too nice to say, okay, I want to go meet somebody else new now. We just let the conversation keep going, keep going. And when you host a party with my formula, you'll give people easy excuses to end their conversations. That's very special, very important. I saw it firsthand on Wednesday night. I said, oh, let's give people the 5-minute warning before the last icebreaker and watch what happens to the room. You will see movement. You will see people walking around, talking to new people. Then the host actually did something special too. He said, all right, everybody, this is the 10-minute warning. The party's going to be finished in 10 minutes. Use this as a chance to go say hi to somebody new, swap their contact details if you want to. Do that now. And sure enough, everybody did it. They say, oh, I got to go talk. And it's that energy, that excitement of ending on time. Because most parties, you know, they just, they drain. They drain on. They carry on too long. This is the power of that. I'm glad you asked. I think you're the first person to ask about that idea of ending on a high note. And it is important.
Yeah. Having an end time is also quite important. Like people mentioned that because they were like this at the 2-hour mark. We ended up leaving the house. So we started at 9:30. Everyone showed up on time. The stereotype. This is not a stereotype. In my case, they all usually when we organize a party, they all at least show up 30 minutes late, even if we're meeting at a bar.
Of course.
I made sure to let them know that we will be starting on time. And everyone, I told them, you can start showing up at 9:15, but we are starting at 9:30. Everyone showed up by 9:25 p.m. And we ended 11:30, but then they helped me pack. Because we all decided to leave to go out to a nearby pub and we stayed there. I stayed there till 4 a.m. Others stayed till 5, 6.
Oh, so, my God.
Yes. That's something to keep in mind. I'm going to ask you about this shortly, about the culture and context. But yeah, this high note, everyone was like, this 2-hour mark was important. Because not because some of them because they would have been bored, but others because they said they would have become more tired, they would just loiter around. So then things would go out of hand. Someone was like, yeah, I would have sat down and I would have just, you know, laid back and chilled. So no, it was like the right moment to just call it a day or call it a night. And then if they wanted to continue, they were free to do it outside. So it was, everyone knew what they were in for. They used the 2 hours to meet new people. They continued meeting new people outside. And it was fun. Some even went out with their name tags on.
I sent remember you a picture. You told me that. That's great. That's so yeah. Nice.
So yeah, but that's something I was skeptical about. That's what I wanted to ask you also. I honestly thought it wouldn't work in a Spanish context, right? In a European context, the idea felt, even my wife, who's Argentine, when I told her about the book, she was like, oh, this wouldn't work here. Name tags? Nah. Harmonica? Oh, fuck off. So she was like, she was very skeptical about it. And before I tell you my observations, what would your response be? First off, have you gotten any criticism in that sense, like, or any people pushing back against that? And two, do you have any counter argument to that perspective before I weigh in?
I think that the difference in cultures is real, and I want to acknowledge it and hold space for it. I think you did a great job of modifying my formula to switching it to a Friday night, to pushing back your start time to later. But I also know, and I've heard from enough people who say, this won't work. And then they do it and it does work and they're surprised. You know, the most extreme example is a woman in Saudi Arabia who hosted a party with my formula. And she said, this is crazy. The idea to not serve dinner if I invite them to my home, the idea to only have it a certain time. The guy here in Mexico City, even on Wednesday, he said that is so culturally improper to kick people out. He said people will come over and they will stay until 4 a.m. And many times, he said, even I've gone to sleep and just left people hanging at my house because I don't want to make them leave. And so I know that there are these ideas that we have about, oh my gosh, I could never do that. Oh, I could never. Well, why not? Why not? Right? In the scope of things, let's stop kind of taking for granted that idea and let's try it. And I have enough history of testing this with people to know that it's worth trying it out, and you might be surprised.
Yeah, it does work like charm. And this is so we can distinguish between two things, like modifying the formula to adapt it to the culture, and then these ideas that are just in our head, right? Like I have to prepare dinner. This is something we also do in Lebanon, right? So I relate to the Saudi Arabia example. Like, you invite people over, it's most probably like almost certain a dinner, etc., and then in this case it's something else. So yeah, these ideas, preconceived notions about how a party should be, you should push back against that for anyone who's listening and who's thinking about this. I was like, yeah, the harmonica, I got their attention. I was like, we're done, we're leaving, that's it. And everyone was like, oh, okay, yeah, but we can continue the party outside. They were like, okay, great. So yeah, there is these ideas, preconceived notions, the name tags also. I was like, would it work? No, it might not work. But then everyone had them, and they were just, they rolled with it. What I did was adapted to the Spanish culture, because the working hours here are until 9 p.m., and during workdays, it's usually very difficult to organize. So Friday night, everyone agreed on a Friday night. Everyone even thought it was early to do the party at 9:30, but then it was good. So yeah, I just adapted it in that sense. Because in your book, you say Monday through Wednesday are good days to organize this party. Maybe it works in other settings, particularly here it would be very difficult. But yeah, adapting.
Let me talk very briefly about why those days are interesting. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, for those new listeners, are not socially competitive days. What do I mean socially competitive? I mean, most Friday, Saturday nights, at least in New York City, where I hosted many events, and even now in my life, more things are happening on Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. There are other parties, there's invitations, there's commitments that we have. And I encourage new hosts to host on non-socially competitive days so that you won't have cancellations, so that you won't get bumped for something else. Because the number one indicator of success for gatherings, the number one metric that I look at, is how many people will show up. Not how many people say yes, but how many people will actually show up. And so much of my book and the work that you'll put into it goes into simply filling the room. Because I know that if you can get 15 people to show up, then your party will almost always be successful. The reason for that is that 15 people is enough that there's an energy and there's an excitement in the room. People will get to meet other people, just the nature of that number of people. Less than 15, I find there's not enough, there's not a critical mass. it's hard to get the momentum to keep the party moving and the energy and the conversation. So I find that hosting Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday is easier for my people, for new hosts especially, to get enough yeses. Now, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday also changes the energy because you're not going to stay out till 4 or 5 a.m. It's easier for you to kick everybody out, and it's easier for you to end the night at 9 p.m. or whenever you end it based on reading my formula. So I respect that you did something different and it worked well for you. I also want to say and challenge you to maybe try hosting it on a Monday, a Tuesday, Wednesday, and maybe they don't go out afterwards. Maybe for your book swap, for example, it's simply just a gathering. We have these nights and these opportunities to meet other people. It's a full week, really. It doesn't have to stay out till 4 a.m. But again, you were successful, so I don't want to change what you did because it's working for you.
Maybe because it was the idea was new, it would have been difficult to do it on a Monday here. But now that they have an idea what to expect, and I have proof now that I have the picture I took with everyone and their name tags and stuff, so people might be more excited for upcoming events. So it would be easier now to convince them. Right, so maybe if I'm going to be saying, yeah, we're going to be doing book swap a la Nick Gray, would you be interested? I most definitely they would show up. So yeah, this is interesting, and we have maybe like I know we're almost at time, but if we can, I don't know if there's anything you want to say about the book, anything. Oh yeah, the bios. But that was quite interesting as well. You talk about sending a list of at least some of the bios of some of those who are going to be attending. I sent the bios of 10 people. I did not write them myself. I asked them to write the bios. I gave them an example how to write a bio. I asked them to send me their bios very briefly. I collected them because many of them I didn't really know. I wrote the bio of one or two people I knew, but then in total, I sent out the bios of 10 people. And it proved to be also helpful. So, is there anything you'd like to say about this sending bios?
So guest bios are one of my secret weapons, and they are a brief conversational access point, a brief, you know, it's not like a fancy who's who. You don't have to talk about professional accomplishments or how successful you can. And I certainly do because I love to brag on my friends, but it can be as simple as you listing a little bio. Let's just say, for example, I have a friend, Rob, who lives in London, and Rob loves to do yoga and drink tea and ride his bike. You know, notice I didn't have to mention about his work, but I'd say something. I'd say, Rob lives in London. He practices yoga for 2 hours a day. Ask him about what his favorite teas are. And you're going to write that for half or more of all your guests. I tend to write it for almost all my guests. And even if I don't know them, I write it myself. I hop on their LinkedIn or social media, and I try to find a little bit about them. But these bios really help, number one, give power to introverts and those with social anxiety. It gives them an idea of who will be there, what to talk about. Number two, it drives the excitement for the parties. People get excited at the people that they're going to meet there. Ooh, wow, this is cool. And number three, it helps boost your attendance rate because now you've included those people. They kind of feel maybe a little obligation to come. So that's a secret thing. I don't speak about that much, but it is real. Those bios are nice. They should take you 20 or 30 minutes to do, and they, again, this is the idea of doing work before the party, of thinking about how to keep people entertained and engaged at the party. And notice that you're spending time on the bios and not on cooking food, because I would rather have someone leave my party hungry rather than bored. Exactly. I want them to talk and meet new people. And these bios really do help to do that. Look, one thing I haven't said is my goal is to get 500 people to read my book, host a party, and then to tell me about it afterwards. And if you are listening or watching to us talk right now and you are excited about doing this, I hope that you will send me an email even before you host your party. Tell me, I want to do this. Hold me accountable. I will hold you accountable. I'll send you some tips. I'll cheer you on. I'll look at your event page and help you with that. But that's my goal right now. It's my sort of my number one thing I'm working on is to try to get 500 people, because I think there is a loneliness epidemic. There's an idea of a friendship recession. I'll include this in the show notes, or I'll send some links, but helping people with that is my main goal.
You're more than half through, right? Like, I think you shared the number.
I think I
had
like 280 now.
280, yeah. Verified parties. That's great. I did my part, and I'm spreading
you
the
did.
Word. So I'm
you did
doing
more
my part,
than
man.
Your part. You're doing great, and you've done so well with this, by the way, that I would encourage you, if you haven't yet, to set the date for your next party. And I think you could do it as a book swap.
I will. And so I would like to just briefly discuss your previous venture, because this is how I got to know you. And for those of you who don't know that part, I stumbled upon a TED talk of yours where you explained your renegade tours at Museum Hack. So
yes.
Would you want to tell us something about that?
Yes, I had a TEDx talk called, I think, Why I Hate Most Museums. And I don't like art museums. I think art museums are really boring. And I have a short attention span. I've never taken an art history class. I struggle with going to art and understanding, why is this important? Why should I care? And through a long series of events that mainly, I'll just tell briefly the story, is that this woman brought me to the Metropolitan Museum of Art on a date. And it was like our third date, and it was rainy outside and cold. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll go to the Met. But she showed me the art, the artifacts. Oh, I love the Egyptian stuff. She showed me Egyptian stuff. And she just talked to me casually, like we were on a date, not like it was an art lecture in university. And I had this amazing experience, magical, where I was like, wow, this is awesome. And I learned that I could say what I did like and what I didn't like. I could ask silly questions like, how much does this cost? And I started to bring my friends to the museum. I started to say, hey, you guys have to check this place out. Like, come to this place. It's not just for tourists. And then I started to give tours for my friends, showing them my favorite things at the museum. And I became a tour guide, unofficial tour guide, someone that's a businessman, has never taken an art class. I became a tour guide just for fun, for free. But then it kind of blew up. And I say blew up, meaning many people started to ask to join my tours. And over a couple of years, I built a successful multi-million dollar business of doing these non-traditional museum tours at major museums around America. And it was a great time of my life. I learned so much. And I think sort of the parties and my thinking about hosting and icebreakers and name tags, all of that was in my last business. And so I have a lot of experience getting in a group, because here's why. What made my museum tour successful, I could immediately tell, was, did I get people talking? Would they ask me questions as the tour guide? If they didn't ask me questions, if they just stood there with their arms crossed, just watching me talk like a monkey or a parrot, it wasn't going to be fun for me and they would get bored. So I had to immediately get interactivity and action. And a lot of that, it's a common thread in my book, my museum tours, my friends, getting the interactivity. I'm doing a lot of conferences now and panels, and I'm trying to bring that same energy to those things as well.
Yeah, I am going to, that's why I asked you, because I am going to try and do more of that in, not only in my courses. I'm trying to do something similar when it comes to tours and stuff like that, because I'm into all culture and heritage, and this is part of what I do in philosophy. It's entertainment, kind of. And I have a discussion group virtual also where we discuss books and movies, like a book club kind of thing. So I do usually do that naturally when it comes to icebreakers and have people, you know, interact and ask questions. But I've never actually done it outside the context of a classroom. Or a context of, you know, doing book clubs or something like that, organizing a party. Mm. So I'm now thinking like I'm about a list of questions, activities to do, and any other thing that might be helpful to keep people entertained. This is what I call myself as well. Like, the reason why I'm a failed academic is because I'm more of an entertainer than a scholar. I don't like that bit. I like having people have fun learning about philosophy or any other thing. So this is where your book and the tour, because I used it in a project I was writing, have been helpful. So yeah, thank you very much. We're again at time. To wrap it up, where can people find you? And if there's anything like you would want to mention, or let me know.
The number one thing that I'm trying to get is for people to host a party. So if you're curious about how hosting a party could change your life, how it can help you have more friends, more connections, get invited to things, be seen as a host. One thing you'll start to notice when you host two or three parties is you start to get introduced to new people that you never would have met otherwise. They say, oh my God, you have to meet Mahmood. He hosts these awesome parties. And people start to come into your life naturally, which is such a rewarding, incredible thing. But that's my goal, is to meet folks. So I hope that you'll reach out. You can send me an email. My address is nick@nickgraynews.com, N-E-W-S, nick@nickgraynews.com. I'm very active on social media. You can add me there. I'm Nick Gray News on all the social media platforms. The name of my book, again, it's The 2-Hour Cocktail Party. I recorded the Audible myself, and I've written a bunch of cool articles, which I'll send links to, things like how to host a housewarming party, how to plan a networking event, how to host a company happy hour even. But yeah, it'd be great to meet any of your listeners and followers. And I love talking about this. I love talking about parties. I'm very passionate. So thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Yeah, thank you very much, Nick, for doing this. It's been fun to me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And see you soon.